Bitcoin is for everybody. There is nobody that is immune from the ills of central banking. So it just happens that I'm talking to farmers on a daily basis in the API chat. But I point out the same things that I point out to everybody. Your daily costs are going up. You pay 1.6% every time you tap your card. Every time a customer tries to pay, and there's some person in the middle that is swiping 1.6% of your energy. And, you know, I go to farmers markets every Saturday up to Coburg North here where I live. And again, farmers are really receptive to it. It's really refreshing to see them, hanging on every word you say.
Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. This is a podcast all about people's personal journeys to Bitcoin. I wanted to know more about the people converging on this new form of money. Why do they see value in it? What skills enable their understanding? How is it changing their lives? If you're a founder looking for funding or an investor looking to make investments, then please reach out as I develop my network in the space. Do me a favor and chuck us a 5-star rating on whichever app you're using to listen, or a like if you're watching it somewhere. As insignificant as this may seem, they help a startup project like this hugely. Lastly, if you have any questions at all, please just reach out. The easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Jake E.S. Woodhouse. Now, I'd like to take a quick moment to talk about our sponsor. Fast Bitcoins are a Bitcoin exchange who you should definitely take a look at next time you're thinking of making a Bitcoin purchase. They're a great team, which for me is always the key to due diligence, whilst their product has a ton of features useful to every Bitcoiner. Check out my episodes with Danny Brewster, the founder CEO, and Nathan Smith, the chief compliance officer, to learn more about the people behind the brand. Thank you to Fast Bitcoins for sponsoring the show. Now, on to today's episode. Today we have a bit of a special episode in that we have a multiple round robin discussion happening. So I welcome from the Australian Beef Initiative. What we're going to do is we're going to go through one by one and just have a very brief introduction as to each person. So, elevator pitch as to who you are, and then we'll circle around and we'll find a bit about how the ABI started and kick off from there. So Nathan, do you want to just start us off and just explain a little bit about yourself, please?
Sure. I started eating a paleo style around 2011. Kind of came across that and it looked interesting. And I always thought my health was reasonable, but this was an interesting thing to try. So I gave it a shot and had really good results. Had a lot more energy, lost some body fat, and doing really good. And then in 2017, I came across Michael Goldstein's website, justmeat.co. And that was real eye-opener and confidence builder that you could actually exist on a pure meat diet. So that got me experimenting a little bit with that side of things. And I'm firmly convinced that meat, and in particular red meat, is the absolute base of every good diet and is key to good health.
Wonderful. Is?
Where to start? I was born in California, but raised my whole life in Kentucky. We had a generational farm that goes back probably 4 or 5 generations. Everything that we ate, I knew exactly where it came from. And that was how I grew up. That's what I knew. That's what made sense. Even our medicine, grandma made all the medicine. So that lifestyle was really important to me. When I went to university, I just noticed nobody knows where their food comes from. And I saw a lot of sick people for the first time. I studied medicine and that informed a lot of my choices. And then I was brought to Australia on a contract. And in the city again, I saw the same thing. Nobody knows where their food comes from. Nobody cares. And that hit me. That struck me from the beginning. It was always important for me to have a relationship. And in terms of diet, I think I've experimented with everything. I had a long stint where, for ethical reasons, I just wouldn't buy any meat from a store. I didn't know how to get meat. I was in the middle of a city in a country all the way on the other side of the world. And so I just thought, well, I'm not trading my life energy for this, what they call beef, and I don't know where it comes from. And slowly I noticed all my muscles atrophied, and I thought, wow, that's interesting. I haven't really changed much, but I'm shrink wrapping myself. But I liked experimenting. I liked understanding what it was being a vegan, what it was being a vegetarian, what it was being a pescatarian. But after all that and many years of discovery, it's just no doubt it is what it is. And so having the Beef Initiative and being able to found it with my best mates is I keep saying to them, it's one of the most important things we'll ever do on earth outside of raising our families, you know.
Awesome. And I can't wait to learn more about, you know, why you started it and that initial idea point. But we'll get to that in a moment. So, John, what brings you to the table tonight?
Hi, Jake. I'm pretty late to the whole beef and caring about your food idea. I grew up in Ireland, played loads of sport, but kind of just was naturally fit and lean all my life. It's not until I got into Bitcoin that I started going down this rabbit hole as well, and particularly the organ meat side of things. So just getting the absolute best nutrients into my body. And I just wish I'd discovered this 20 years ago. And, you know, the second best time to discover this is today. So I'm channeling all my energies into this now. And this and Bitcoin, it's hard to top those two things to dedicate your life to.
Brilliant. And Jake, lastly, yourself.
Look, I've got a short path, but it's pretty varied. I'm in my early 30s and I remember sitting in dentist clinics and doctor's clinics and filling out immigration forms, and it always would come up with occupation. And I went from student to salesman to business owner to entrepreneur, and nothing really ever fit right. And one day I was sitting waiting for a blood test and I had to fill out the form, and I thought I'd write down farmer. And it's not 100% right for me because I don't labor on the farm enough. I've got pretty soft hands, but it's the closest I've found to the right phrase. And that's how I've fallen into this bunch. I own a farm and a butchery. We process all of our own meat and we offer custom processing for other people so they can send their animals in and we piece them up and help them get their meat to market. And it's been that process that, you know, in the last 30 years, I found like I've really found my people. You know, through school, through different workplaces, through traveling, through church, I've never found my people. But the farmers, the growers, the people that care about what they eat, the people that care about what their kids watch on TV, you know, all of this sort of holistic way of thinking about what life is and trying to put in a huge amount of good and get out a huge amount of good, I've found them in this click. So that's where I'm at.
Brilliant. And so if I can summarize then, so Nathan, Izzy, and John, you're the founding directors of the Australian Beef Initiative. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And Jake, you are a farmer who has signed up to the ABI.
I'm involved however they want me.
Okay. Well, what we'll do then is let's understand a bit more about what ABI is as an organization. Izzy, I'll go to you just to start with. Talk me through the initial idea. Like all organizations spark from a moment of inspiration or a problem that someone had. So kick us off from that very origin moment, please.
Certainly. Before I do, I just have to comment on something that Farmer Jacob said. He talked about what your children are watching. That's food. That's food for the soul. So I appreciate a sentiment like that. That's exactly right. If we don't care holistically what we're digesting, whether it be mentally or physically, we're done. So I just wanted to put that out there and say, I hear you, Jacob, and I resonate with exactly what you're saying on every level, brother. ABI is real simple, Mr. Woodhouse. I love your podcast, by the way. It's absolutely stellar. You're killing it.
Thank you.
Australian Beef Initiative is real simple. The best way to say how it started was John Tiernan bought some cows. That's how it started. I couldn't be more accurate. John Tiernan bought some cows. He called his friend Nathan and he said, this was during the whole, I'm going to say pandemic, if anyone's offended, they call me up and we'll have a chat.
You say whatever you want, is no problem, mate.
You will kick me off the podcast, right?
Yeah, you cancel.
Good luck with that. So he called Nathan and said, this is what I did and I'm going to feed my family. And Nathan got a hold of me and I was like, man, how did I miss that? I used to have a 2-bedroom apartment and I was growing vegetables in my apartment. I never thought of just buying cows and put them on the land, even though my family had run cows and bulls. And the moment he did that, of course, he was feeding his family, and then he offered to feed our families. And that's how our friendship started. And from there, I mean, the boys can correct me if I'm wrong, but the way it rolled out was just conversations saying, man, this is important. What you just did was important for everybody. Not just you, not just me, not just Nathan. This is what needs to happen across the board. None of us had heard of SLIM. Well, maybe John had heard of SLIM, but me or Nathan hadn't. And one day, I called him and I said, man, this has got to scale. This has to happen. This is so important. And so we sort of started kicking things off. I don't want to talk ahead of the other guys or hold the space, but we started kicking things off, and it was going really well. Like, people were very interested. They want to know how we did it, how John did it, what that meant. Could they also get beef as well? And when I was overseas, I called the lads and I'm like, we got to take this seriously. This is something that is vital. And they both just jumped on, and that's how ABI started, as far as I can recollect. Right there, that's how it started.
Awesome. Thank you, Izzy. And so, John, I'll steer it to you then, sir. You bought some cows. So what in, you know, God's name are you doing buying cows? As crazy as that sounds, it's you know, it's how we eat, it's how we farm, it's part of the food chain. But, you know, we've got to know each other a bit in the last year or so. You're working in a high school in Melbourne, you know, you're not living out in country Victoria near a farm. So where did your passion for cows come from, and what made you decide to go out and do that?
Probably just talking to people on Twitter about the importance of securing your food supply, your money, and your energy. I'd secured my money through Bitcoin, of course. And the next one I could possibly take off then was food. I just bought beef off a farmer called Dan Kelton, absolute legend, and asked him, could I buy a few cattle and perhaps run them with his cattle? He was open to the idea. And fast forward 18 months, we had our first two steers ready for processing. And, you know, the story just grew legs from there. I actually got to meet Jacob then through the processing of my meat. And Jacob processed our beef, packaged it, and shipped it back down to Melbourne. And then we sold it mainly to the Bitcoiners around Melbourne who were really keen to support it. So yeah, that's where it all stemmed from. And it's just showing the power of networks. One person knew one person knew one person. And lo and behold, we're a huge organization now moving forward. And we've just got such momentum. It's very exciting.
Brilliant. Well done, mate. Such good hustle. Like, not many people get up and go and do something like that. So, you know, massive shout out. And I'd actually just today finished a slow cooked bit of brisket that you sold me. I always tell everyone, you know, my fridge is full of all this beef that I bought directly from a farmer. And it sounds so simple, doesn't it? It's like, what, you know, I bought direct from a farm, but actually it's not that commonplace in today's world, even though it used to be once upon a time. So we can probably jump into some of the reasons that's become the case. But before we get to that part of the conversation, Nathan, just to bring it back to you and try and summarize a bit about the foundation of ABI, what's your role within the team? And I understand you guys have ultimately come to a really excellent mission statement. So what is the mission statement of ABI, and how do you fit into this founding team?
Yeah, I might let Izzy read that out.
Go for it.
Being carefully drafted. But yeah, it's very interesting how it started. I think really it was just sort of a started as a signal group, and was probably set up with two or three people. And then, as the guy said it, it grew out from there. Just one person connected with one person. We had a couple of video calls with interested people, and probably had around 15, 20 people on those from different backgrounds. So we had some farmers. We had others who were interested in regenerative agriculture, regenerative beef farming. And then we have a friend in common, the Wizard of Oz, and he gave us a bit of a kick up the pants and said, you guys need to move this beyond just discussions into something that's more formalized. Mm-hmm. So we always do what he tells us to do. So we went away and gave some thought to what sort of a structure could this look like. And we've been refining that. We're looking to set up a co-op. Okay. So that's an organization that is a company that's owned by its member. It's one member, one vote. It's able to have commercial activities, but doesn't need to. And the main purpose is really to facilitate that decentralized network of farmers, producers, and consumers who are looking to know the provenance of their food and really value regenerative agriculture. So the benefit, but obviously for the consumers, is that the quality of the product they get is far higher than they might get off the supermarket shelf. And for the farmers, instead of going through middlemen, instead of having their beef or their farm produce lumped in as a sort of a commodity stock that's just sold with every other piece of beef on a supermarket shelf, they get recognition in a price sense for the extra work that they've done to produce this beef using regenerative agricultural practices. So the end consumer may not really be paying much more, but it's just that you're able to cut out that middleman that takes a big piece out of the value that sits between the producer and the end consumer. So hopefully a win for everyone involved.
Brilliant. That conceptualization of the problem that people face is so interesting when it comes to kind of starting new things. Like, what is the problem that everyone has? And Jacob, I'll come to you in just a moment to understand what it feels like as a farmer and some of the problems you would have faced before. But Izzy, could you just take us through the mission statement of ABI and we'll kind of wrap up the introduction of the organization?
I would, but it's being written and I don't think it would be apt to do so.
Not been finished? Okay.
I can certainly give you a breakdown of what it feels like at this moment. I didn't know that I was going to be reading it, or I literally had it.
Well, it's not essential to read it at all. So if it's not ready, then don't worry about it. It's just something that I know that was being put together, and essentially a bunch of volunteers were offering their opinion as to how to kind of create it. And I think that's a really interesting process to have been through. So yeah, if there's no output yet, don't worry about it at all.
Let me just comment on that, Jake, because you brought up a really interesting point in regards to volunteers. I want to give a massive, massive shout out to BTC Brisket right now. Brisket Briggs Catley has been integral since day one with the Australian Beef Initiative. And he wrote one of the strongest drafts that we'd ever come across. So we've really been working with that one. In a nutshell, without reading it, I just want to tell you, we envisage this as an umbrella operation, an organization that would literally bring paddock to plate foods. And in that cohesion, you want to win-win-win for everybody. What I saw was a lot of multi-generational farms were being broken up and sold off. And that's heart-wrenching for me, coming from that background myself. And I could see perfectly why, which I think you're going to get into in just a little bit. But what it also did was put these things on the shelf that they're calling food, which is not food. It's chemicalized sludge. And it was important for me and us with the Beef Initiative to make the point that not only are we bringing the network to bring paddock to plate food in your house, but we're creating the community that used to exist on the earth. And when you do that, when you recreate that community, it solves multitudes of problems. Number one, all the wisdom of our ancestors, how to farm. I mean, Jacob can attest to this. It's not easy. You are constantly solving problems. So how to farm, what it means to process meat, to cure meat. When you have to jump through regulation after regulation, that's very hard on people. And then your meat gets packaged up and frozen for months on end and shipped to the other side of the world. We wanted to create a network where ruminants could run free on the soil under the care of farmers like Jacob, Carolyn Sugate, Dan Kelton. I'm sure there's others in here that I'm forgetting in this moment. Foz, Bronze Foz, where these people care about their animals. And when ruminants run free on the earth, they regenerate our soil. So we're solving multitudes of problems here. If I had to put a stamp on what the mission statement is, it's that. It's let's look at the problems, let's solve them, and what's the best way to do it? Well, all our ancestors knew this. So we're not recreating the wheel. We're actually preserving the knowledge that they spent lifetimes to collect so it doesn't disappear, so we can heal the soil, so we get food from people who cared about it. That's what this is about, Jake. That's not really a mission statement. It's a lot more succinct than my rambling.
No, and I'm just something that I see. So I now live in a city, but I actually grew up in the countryside in Dorset in the south of the UK and on a dairy farm. And so farming is actually not a million miles away from my life as well either. And I've got cousins that are farmers and uncles and stuff. And from a macro perspective, it's a fascinating time to be talking about this. And then you look at, you know, urban populations versus rural populations, you look at the health of humans. It's all like, it's crazy what's going on. And we have to take responsibility for what goes in our mouth. And projects like what you guys are doing are helping people do that in a better way. It's so obvious to me, at least at this stage. So, no, it's really cool. Let's swing over to Jacob. I'm intrigued. So you filled out your medical form or whatever it was you mentioned saying farmer, and it felt just fucking brilliant. You're like, yeah, I'm a farmer. So how did you become a farmer? And talk us through some of the reasons that something like ABI is of value to you. And I imagine that will be along the lines of, you know, accessing markets to sell your produce into. And if you're interested in regenerative agriculture, as what Nathan has suggested you would be, teach us about that as well.
Sure. Well, I've been in retail, grassroots retail. My family has been self-employed in Australia for 60 years. We're German immigrants. My grandfather came over a bit over 60 years ago, and I always joke that we were unemployable. We just actually wrote his memoir, my grandpa, for family reasons. He's still alive. He's still with us. But in the course of his three first years of landing in Australia, he walked in and out of 60 factory jobs as a tradesman. And I laughed that we're unemployable. You know, there's this funny story where a foreman offered him overtime to do a couple hours driving trucks, and he took the job, and he was promised double time, and he was paid 98%. Like, due to rounding, he was short paid a couple cents. So he walked out of the job, never went back again. That's, you know, even though he was so much better off, he earned way more money than he'd ever earned before, but it wasn't double time, like he was promised. It was 98%, so he walked out. So we're unemployable. If I was sitting in our John Tiernan's classroom, we would have got along famously on a personal level, and he would have absolutely hated me on a professional level as a student. That's the story of my life. So I've been involved in retail forever, for my context of what forever is anyway. And when I got married and my wife conceived our first son, I started gardening a bit, and then I just started thinking, you know, wouldn't it be like, I sort of felt like I had this duty to do everything a bit better, eat a bit better, work a bit better, be home a bit better. And part of that was, if you're going to be healthier for your family, to be around and be more active and be more engaged and have a better mood or whatever it might be, it matters what you eat. And then you get right down the rabbit hole, and it doesn't just matter what you eat, it matters what you eat. And I just went on this YouTube, audiobook, paperback rabbit hole for months and months and months, and I ended up asking my father, who had a hobby farm down the road of 100 acres, could I put a few cows in the corner and buy a bit of electric fence and start moving them around? And, you know, they're still dad's cows, you can still sell them into the market, but I just want to move them around all the time instead of leaving all the gates open, because I read this book about this guy who moves his cattle all the time, and it's meant to be better for the paddocks and better for the cows and better for the farmer and better for the budget. And at the end of the year, I just want to put one in my freezer. And then a friend got interested, and a family member got interested. And that was 2019. You know, we're 4 years down the road now, and I've got 4 full-time staff on my farm. We're operating on 300 acres at the moment. So we've just leased our third 100-acre farm. So we're about to expand into 300 acres. I own my own butchery with my wife. And we butcher all of our own meat, and we're bringing beef, pork, chicken, lamb, eggs to market, direct to consumer. And then we're also adding in a heap of little ancillary productions like honey and fruit from the orchard and, you know, little things that aren't too exciting, but they're part of the ecosystem. I just bought 100 fingerlings, little cod fish, and put them in my dams. So, you know, in 2 or 3 years, if I get to fish a few out, there's not going to be an economic boon. But it's just nice to be able to have my own fish, and my dam has fish all of a sudden. You know, everything's exciting. And as to what the ABI can do for us, from the outset, I was never interested in commodity trading, selling into the market. So I've never operated under that paradigm where the price is dictated to me. So for my operation, personally, there's no paradigm being busted there. But I'm talking to farmers all the time that are wanting to get out of this paradigm. And where's the platform? Where's the tools? Where's the community? Where's the network? Where's the customers? Where's the money? Imagine, you know, we've all got different trades and skills here. You know, imagine John being a teacher all year long, 52 weeks of the year, not being paid a cent. And then at the end of the year, he puts on a piece of paper the amount of labor he put into all the kids teaching them and puts it up in the town square, and it gets raffled off and everyone gets to bid on it. And if the bidding's poor for the day, he only gets $10,000 for his labor spent for the whole year. Mm. Or if the bidding's good for the day, he gets $150,000. You know, there's a very successful generational farmer next to me. He sells into commodity markets and done it very successfully for 4 generations, you know. But I was telling him why I'm doing what I'm doing. He was very interested, very open-minded. And he said, you know what, Jake, a few years ago, and he's like in his 70s, right? But he said, a few years ago, I was at the yard. The yards is where you take your animals, your steers at the end of the year, your fat steers, to sell them to market. And he said, my pen the lot that his animals were the last ones to be sold for the day. And he'd been walking through the yards all morning, listening to all the animals being auctioned off, and the price was great. And he was excited because his steers that he'd sent that year, in 60 years of being a farmer, were the best steers he'd ever done. He was convinced they were the best. They looked the best. They were the fattest. They were uniform. They were nice and calm. Everything was great. And while walking towards the yards, he was trailing three men walking abreast. And he, over earshot, he heard them discussing, "Oh, look, I'm full for the day, and I think he's got what he needs. You can have this lot." One bid. The third guy that was given the parcel bought them, got them for next to nothing, and his whole year's revenue for his steer operation. Probably a fourth generation farmer. He got nothing for them, essentially, compared to what all of his peers got. His peers had all the bragging rights now. And it didn't break him financially, but what does that do to a man's ego? Like, what does that do to a man's self-worth? I don't know. The whole thing to me is disgusting. And asking someone to gamble their toil and risk and labor and ingenuity and knowledge and family time and everything else at the end of the year is an offensive proposition at best. Ooh. So, you know, rather than get involved in that market or even complain about it, I'm not trying to complain about it. I'm trying to describe it. We're offering alternatives. Set your price. Be a price maker, not a price taker. Shake the hand of your customer and let's get on with business.
Awesome. What a brilliant explanation. And so the thing that really shines through there is this, well, first of all, entrepreneurial spirit. I love that. Just, you know, at every turn, you're thinking about how to better yourself and your family and your own body, which is something that we can all learn from, no doubt. What I'd like to highlight there is this kind of this obvious need. Well, to my mind, it's like it's a marketplace, right? So you've got on the one side, you've got urban buyers. On the other side, you've got rural producers. And it's how do you facilitate trade between them in a more streamlined way than before? Mm. And with, as you guys describe, a network, like what you're setting up is a new type of network. And it's so cool to hear that in that kind of rural producer base, there's a need for a new network. And, you know, that's where obviously the internet comes in. And if you're a 70-year-old generational farmer, you didn't sell meat using the internet. You had a different set of processes. And it's how things develop over time. So I don't know who would take this question per se, but I'm intrigued as to, first of all, like that dynamic. So the rural producer, the urban buyer, am I correct in assuming that that's really the aim of the ABI to create some kind of marketplace? And then what are the supply and demand mechanics? So how big have you found the reception on the supply side and how big is the reception been on the demand side?
We might take the first part of that, Jake. I think this is where we would differ from other organizations. So, for example, there's a group called Our Cow, which I think has done a great job in facilitating that marketplace between largely urban buyers. It's not all urban, but that's where most of the population is, and grass-fed, perhaps regenerative farmers. Our Cow is the centralized portal that the farmers sell into. Our Cow will package, process, package, and then distribute. And that's great. And those guys have done really well. And my folks are big fans of theirs and we order regularly from them. Where we would differ as the Australian Beef Initiative is taking a leaf out of Bitcoin's book. So we're concerned that there are attacks on people's food supply. And we can talk about conspiracy theories, but our friends over in Davos, it's no conspiracy. They're out there openly saying that you will eat the bugs. Yeah. People will be rationed in their meat purchases. All the while, these people are flying their private jets and having big steaks and getting up to other activities that have been publicized recently. So what we're looking to do is to have a network or to facilitate a network that can't be shut down. It was very difficult to shut down. And the way that we do that in the way that Bitcoin has, it needs to be decentralized. So there needs to be a lot of different nodes, a lot of different connections, and we can't have any central points of failure. So the Australian Beef Initiative really is a portal that will facilitate the connection of the farmer direct to the consumer. Mm-hmm. So you're not selling through the ABI necessarily. It's more that the ABI will, for the interested consumer, will have a schedule of farms that might be in their area. They can go and research. They can do farm tours. They can do their own research on who that farmer is and what are their practices, mm-hmm. and then get in touch directly with the farmer. And on the flip side, the farmer can market their practices, beautiful videos from the properties that they manage, and in that way attract consumers and set up those direct relationships to allow that business to flow.
Fantastic.
Just before we move on, I want to, because I know you've got a two-part question there. I'd like to say something on what my brother Nathan just said. So if you look at that, I mean, it was so succinct. You're a better speaker than me. And I'm very glad that you opened up a can of worms about conspiracy realness, because, you know, that's a rabbit hole. I'll go deep down. I've been deep down that for almost 30 years now. But if you look at what he just said and the importance of it, so let's look at Australia alone. This is going global. Like, Slim's coming over here to be with us, going to Jacob Wolke's farm for a very particular reason. This will go global. But if you look at Australia alone, Jake Woodhouse, you're in Melbourne.
Yep.
And you're a part of ABI. So you know there are three or four different farmers that you can go to their ranch. You can meet them. You can see how the cows are raised. You can bring food, whether it's beef, which is primarily what we're focused on, or any other products from their farm directly into your home, yeah? Mm-hmm. Now, what happens if you travel up to Darwin? You go on a holiday with your family. We want the same thing. Oh, now I'm in Darwin. Going to the ABI. What farmers are in Darwin? Oh, these 18 farmers are in Darwin. Well, I'm closest to this, and let me go out and shake his hand and see what he's about.
Wow. And it strikes me, I don't know why I thought this, but one of the reasons Uber was particularly aggressive with its expansion is when you turn up in a new international location and you want to get a cab, you want to know that there's an Uber there. And so they, you know, took on a huge amount of investment and they went so aggressive globally so that you don't need another travel app. You just rock up and then boom, you know that Uber's going to function there because there's a pool of drivers ready to go. So that's just struck my mind. That's the power of a network. And then you have really interesting network effects that come in. So as you become the umbrella organization that are like a light, like drawing in flies in a sense, there'll be farmers all across Australia that have been farming in a certain way, but perhaps didn't know how to get their stuff to market that will be attracted by this. At least that's my assumption. A couple of years back, I had a food tech startup that failed. My wife and I were working on it. We were looking a lot at home cooking and how unless you could get people to home cook, they were always going to eat processed foods or fast foods, and that food was very poor for them. And we were looking at a lot of supply chains and the impact of the food system. It was a fascinating thing to research. And the whole process of you do the hard work for people. So I, as an urban buyer, I like buying my meat from a butcher called Hagen's. And I know that they've got a bunch of different organic farms in and around Melbourne that they use, but I've never necessarily gone higher up the food chain. I've just know that they do it for me. But when John went through his process, I'm like, well, I'd much prefer to buy it from John. And then I always thought it'd be cool to have a platform where I actually want to see photographs of the cow and like an even more like richer context to where the food's coming from. And to be able to visit the farm's incredibly cool. Like my daughter's a couple of years old now. She'd love to come and do that. So it's a really exciting prospect. And I read a book, Charles Massey, The Call of the Reed Warbler, and that obviously details a bunch of people that have been working on this for a long, long time. And actually on that, so Jacob, I'll say this to you, I think, but the phrase regenerative agriculture has been used in this conversation, and there'll be people listening that listen to this show for Bitcoin, but not for food. So what does regenerative agriculture mean to you, and why is it important?
Man, I used to hashtag the absolute life out of regenerative agriculture. And it's just, it's become this wishy-washy every second person. What does it mean to you? What does it mean to you? It's really simple, right? What do the two words mean? For me, it's agriculture that regenerates the commons. What are the commons? It's resources that we all share. So we all share water. We all share air. But beyond that, we all share the vitality and the health of soil. We all share community. We all share wealth. We all share sovereignty. There's so many things we share. So is your version of agriculture extractive or regenerative? Because when you're growing your crops or growing your beef, you can literally be mining. You can be extracting the goodness out of the soil and out of your environment and degenerating it. Or you can be regenerating it, because animals, don't forget, animals and plants are the environment. So they're not inherently bad to be growing. Humans, plants, animals, we are all the environment. It's the management of these practices that determines the outcome of it. So for me, on our farm, we're regenerative farmers, and we just want, every time we do something, we just want it to be trending up, always going better, more carbon, more minerals, more vitamins, more happiness, more children, more community, more money.
Awesome. And so to be labeled a regenerative agriculture farm, Is there like a certification process in the same way that organic has?
And, oh God, I hope not.
No, so is there not? I don't know anything about this. So,
There's plenty of people all around the globe trying to do it. Like America's got a regen cert coming out. Australia has a few versions. Like they've got one that's called Land to Market that got launched about 2 years ago, which is probably one of the closest things. And the Land to Market, out of all the certifications I've ever seen, they're probably one of the best because they're actually measuring progression. So it's not input-based and it's not necessarily output-based. They just want to make sure you're trending up in increasing the commons. Because everyone, if you're measuring output-based, everyone's context is different. What if they're in drought? What if they're in flood? What if they had financial hardships? So as long as everyone's trending up. So it's probably the best out of all of them. But I steer way clear of all, you know, I've got enough bureaucracy in my life to pay someone to give me a piece of paper that when I then sell a product, I've got to give them 1% of every dollar generated for the, you know, beholden privilege of using their stamp. It's not for me.
Yeah, interesting. It's something perhaps that the ABI, I guess, could do. So I would just envisage myself as a customer here, and I know that ABI's developed relationships with farmers that actually give a shit, and therefore that's enough for me to know that what I'm getting is better quality. So yes, any entrepreneurial pursuit doesn't want to create more problems for farmers. It wants to do the opposite of that. John, I'd like to just steer it to yourself quickly. I know that you've mentioned the likes of Alan Savory in the past to me. So as part of your purchase of beef, thinking back 18 months ago, whenever it was you got into this industry, like, was the regenerative side of things very important to you, and why was that the case?
Had started to hear about it. And I think Bitcoin started to make me really conscious about verification for myself. You start becoming a huge skeptic, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's just inherent in Bitcoiners that we don't trust, we verify, and just applied that to food. So I'd met Dan, been to his farm a few times, and just to make sure that I had that knowledge and had experienced it firsthand myself, that instantly gives me way more trust in what Dan was doing and what Dan believed in. And then, you know, Dan and I have been bouncing off one another for years now, talking about philosophers like Alan Savory and Greg Judy and Will Harris. All these guys are absolute legends. And, you know, I feel like we're just trying to spread that word. And ABI is going to help the likes of you, Jake, go to a farm directly. Jake, your point there about the ABI doing the verification for you, I suppose we'd say then maybe you go to the farm and meet Jake, shake his hand, see what he's doing firsthand. You know, I feel like that's like running your own node in Bitcoin. Don't rely on anybody else. Run your node, go to the farm, meet the farmer, see the beef growing right in front of your eyes.
Yeah, brilliant. It's really encouraging people to take responsibility for their decisions and encouraging you to do your own research, which is, you know, of course, something that's important. But in this day and age, convenience is often sold as the best way forwards, but the convenience comes at what cost? And often we don't necessarily recognize the cost.
It comes at the cost of slavery. You can either choose to be sovereign across life or not. It's simply a choice. If you go to the store and you choose to buy these particular products, you put your trust in something. And what are you putting your trust in? I never wanted to put my trust in a company unless I could verify who they were, what their ethos was. And my question was always, would I sit down to dinner with these people? And if I couldn't answer that, I'm not buying their stuff. I'd sit down to dinner with Jacob and Anne and the children every day of the week. And that's why I eat the meat that he provides. And same goes for John as well. It's important. Sovereignty is a life choice.
And for those people out there, Izzy, that haven't necessarily dug into sovereignty as a concept as much as you might have done on your journey so far, could you explain it as simply as possible? So what other areas of your life can it have an impact, this kind of slight shift in decision making as to how sovereignty is important? So whether it's food or whether it's your exercise choices or how you store your value over time with money, it's in lots of areas. But just unpack that a bit for us.
You know, growing up on a farm, we relied on all of our neighbors. Like if we didn't have something, then they had it. So it created a community. And as I was saying to you before, I moved into cities. I saw everyone works off of these transactional sort of lives, this convenience that you're talking about. Everything becomes somewhat transactional. And if you really think of what that is, you're trading who you are, because we live in a society where you pay for things. Oftentimes on a farm, you don't necessarily, at least back with my grandparents, you don't necessarily pay for things. A lot of times you would give, part of your crop to someone, they would give something to you. I'm not saying that we have to go back to that system at all, but just recognize that we live in a transactional world. And so for me, sovereignty is understanding those transactions. What am I transacting with? Who am I transacting with? If I have a television in my house, which I don't, I haven't had one since 1996, and a commercial came on and I heard it and I was like, my mind is transacting with that. Mm-hmm. I don't want that garbage to come inside my being. That night I threw the television out and I've never had one since. If you look at your life transactionally like that, you can realize that sovereignty is the most simple choices you make across the board. Am I going to trade my life energy for this product that I'm about to buy? Because money is my life energy. I put into action, I was paid or I earned, or I created the value and received income from that. And now I'm going to trade it. Trade it for what? You want a great world to live in? Realize that this transaction starts with you on the base level. So that probably wasn't the most simple answer, but that's how I look at it.
No, it's great, Izzy. And well, that's what this is all about, conversations, right? You don't have to agree with each other the whole time, but it's about what sparks debate and gets you thinking in a different way and helps you explore different things. A question for all of you, actually, which is more of a futuristic one. What is the most exciting thing to you about what the ABI is so far? Each one of you can answer that in different ways.
Okay, I feel like the hive mind is something that the ABI will offer that I don't really see elsewhere in the farming community. So with the power of the internet, we're able to create this network, and it includes some very intelligent people in different spheres of life, and the ability to work on a problem together. So firstly, say a farmer has a particular problem. An example of this would be abattoirs, processing of animals, highly regulated. Regulations are very confusing. So even Jacob would say, even between council borders, you'll get a different answer on regulations. Even within the same council, you'll get a different answer from a different person on a different day to the same question. So it has issues there. And that's obviously a big bottleneck that we've identified that's a problem for farmers. So one of our projects is to look at mobile abattoirs, mobile processing of animals, which is fantastic for the animal because they don't have the stress of having to travel. And that results in a better quality of meat, as well as the improvement in animal welfare. So that's an example of one project where the network's coming together to come up with ideas of how could we look at solving this problem, or at least coming up with a solution, which can then be open sourced to the network and to the world for others to fork off in a particular direction to build upon and iterate and improve. So my sense is that farming life often was relatively isolated. You had a community like Iz talked about where, you know, a small network of people you could talk to. But now with the power of the internet and the networks that the internet can facilitate, you're opening up to a much bigger network across Australia and even across the world. So our friends in America, and we have Beef Initiative starting in Spain and France, and there'll be many others. You're opening up that sort of crowd intelligence to the benefit of the group and to individuals within that network. So I think that's probably the most exciting thing from my perspective at the moment.
It's very cool.
I'll come up next. I'm not shy of talking. Just to circle back to what Mr. Jacob Walke said before, the choices we make. So for me, the most important thing of this at all is the health. Healthy people make healthy choices. Unhealthy people make unhealthy choices. And to be healthy, you have to give your body exactly and only what it needs. And that's your choice. That's your experimentation to figure out what that is. We're all unique. And what I see with ABI is that ability to bring paddock to plate food whilst creating a community. If you look at John's son, or you look at Nathan's children, or you look at Jacob's boys, you see real health, real dynamism. And those are the type of people that make strong choices because they're strong individuals. So for me, I would say ABI, just as my brother Slim says, saves lives.
Wow, awesome.
I think the thing that's exciting me the most is meeting people who understand proof of work, not necessarily in a Bitcoin context, but in every area of their life. And I feel like we certainly are all on a mission to sort of see this Bitcoin idea through. And this has been a really powerful way of introducing people to Bitcoin. I wouldn't say shilling, but rather just like explaining how this thing works and how it aligns perfectly with what you've been fighting for so long in your life, your generational farmers. Here's a way to store your value and give it to the next generation and the next generation. So that's the value that I think I can add to the experts that are out there in the field, like Jacob, like Dan Kelson, like Don Walker, like Karen Sugate, like Foz, all these experts out in the field. I feel like that's something that I can bring to them, and hopefully they can see the value in that.
Wonderful.
Yeah, look, twofold for me. I love networking. I love meeting new people. Like, I feel like every day spent when you haven't met someone new is almost a bit of a waste. Like, you can meet somebody who's 40 years old, and in 10 minutes, if you're clever and nuanced and patient, you can glean the best tips out of 40 years of life worth living. You know, like, it's so exciting meeting new people, but it's also access to a potential bigger market. You know, I've got absolutely no ambition to stay small and stagnate. And that's something that I believe is plaguing regenerative agriculture. And I spoke about this on a podcast the other week, and I put my head on the pillow afterwards, and I thought, oh my Lord, I'm going to have all the commies come after me now. I should keep my mouth shut. But the regen ag space is, it's really hard for young farmers to get a start at the moment. Like, in my area, in my postcode, agricultural land is $13,000 an acre. So it's really cost prohibitive. I'll do some real quick cattle arithmetic.
Please.
You ready? So in my area, you know, maybe you're going to run 1 cow to 2 acres. So you're spending $26,000 to get 1 cow and a calf up to a wean weight, and then you've got to have a little bit more land to fatten that calf up. Let's say it's $30,000 of land to get 1 calf to sale weight to go to the market, where you might get $2,000 for it at the market if you're lucky. You know, and then you've got all the labor, all the feed, the cost of the cow, you've got losses, you've got vet bills, whatever it might be. Like, economically, it's just atrocious. But there's so many other powerful ways to circumnavigate this, and the power of community and networking and trading ideas and supporting each other. So that's the paradigm. It's $13,000 a land for maybe $2,000 for your wiener per year. But what we're doing is we're leasing land at $120 a year or $150 a year or whatever it might be, and we're selling the finishing steer for $5,000. You know, and that doesn't account for any of the mumbo jumbo in the middle. You know, there's a whole balance sheet there to tease apart. But being networked with people, other people that are thinking outside the box, producers and then consumers that actually see the value in what you're trying to do in your communities on your land, it, you know, should be better than Facebook. Let's say that.
It's very, very cool to hear you all four talk about this. There's just a lot of amazing stuff going on in the world right now, should you choose to look. And this is exactly what I'm talking about when I make that kind of comment. Like, it's just incredible how much people, you know, see opportunities, bind together in difficult times, like, stuff comes out of it. You know, it's only a year or so ago that in Melbourne in particular, I was still in a fucking lockdown. Like, what the hell is going on? And yet here we are having this discussion about developing networks of people that produce high quality food that cannot be shut down. Yes. Brilliant. Like, fuck you. Try and lock us down again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's absolutely excellent, this kind of reaction to that. And that brings me on nicely to then talk about traction. So, like any early stage kind of organization and idea, like, where have we actually got to here? So you're talking about potentially developing a co-op, but in terms of the people that have come on the journey so far, you know, how many farms are interested in this project, and how many people on the urban buyer side have, you know, shown an interest so far, and how's the kind of, let's say, just a summary of the traction at this point. I don't know who's the best to answer that.
I think all of us could probably answer it. Something to be noted here, Mr. Woodhouse, this has been grassroots from the beginning. A lot of it has been volunteer in terms of putting together our website, putting together our logo. Everyone has just put a hand up in terms of, hey, I want to help with that. And now we've got subgroups throughout our, I guess you'd call it a membership, which hasn't even been rolled out yet. There's somewhere between like 60 and 100 people that are already involved. just from word of mouth, and it just grows. It more people are coming every day, and we haven't even launched. We haven't even put ourselves out there. Like Jacob's Farm is the moment that Australian Beef Initiative launches in Australia. So the traction is interesting, at least from my perspective, because it is wholeheartedly grassroots. I look at this as we are biomagnetic nodes. We are electricity and water as humans. And Bitcoin doesn't work without us biomagnetic nodes, and neither does ABI. At the base of it, it is human to human connections. You brought up the lockdowns here in Melbourne. I don't know if all your listeners understand. For all of us that are in Victoria, we were one of the most heavily locked down places on the face of the earth. So to circle back to what Nathan was saying before about Davos and conspiracy theories, in my view, and you don't have to agree with me, that was exactly the plan, to divide people. Well, no, you can't divide us. Yeah, Bitcoiners are some of the most self-preserving people on the face of the earth, and so are farmers. I've seen it my whole life. When you put that much care into something, whether it's creating a new money for the world to operate on or creating food for people to live on, that's care. Because at the end of the day, Jake, we're going to take this animal's life. That has to be done with grace. If it's not done with grace, then what am I? I'm just almost sadistic in a sense. So to know that the farmers that are coming are like-minded, or at least if they're not, they're open-minded, that was so important to us in the beginning, to not launch out as this big organization that would draw everybody in, to keep it small, keep it tight, nurture it, protect it, so that the people that came were the right people, because there's no way 3, 4, 5, 6 of us could have done this on our own. The amount of people that have put their hand up, we've got people building payment rails for farmers. Michael from VoltPay. We've got educators. Yeah, we've got educators like John Tiernan who have full-time jobs, who have new babies and are going, I'm going to be at the summit teaching Bitcoin and farmers how to learn how to run nodes and accept payment in Bitcoin. So when you talk about traction, at least in my perspective, it's not something that we focused on, hey, we need to grow really big. However, I think Nathan and John can attest to this. As the number of people started coming, we realized very quickly then we need to set this up properly. And that's why we looked at a cooperative so that every member could have a vote in the organization. But the importance of laying down the foundation in the beginning. So that's my perspective on it. I'd be curious to know what the other lads here have to say.
Well, yeah, anyone got any comments to that at all?
Yeah, I've been really impressed with the traction that we've had, Jake. Just starting off, just a handful of people. It's been amazing how just one person introduces one person and one person. And yeah, as Easy said, we're, you know, somewhere between 60 and 100 people are involved without doing any marketing whatsoever. So it's got great momentum. We've got some great farmers on board like Jacob, and then we'll be looking to go more publicly out there at some point when we're ready to accept that sort of demand for new inquiry. So we do have some goals in terms of where we might get to in 12 months' time for members, but let us come back to you and share those and we'll see how we go. But certainly the early signs are really encouraging and it keeps us going, enthusiasm for this project.
Yeah, it's very cool.
You know my goal, Nathan, I want at least 5,000 people to have paddock to plate food by the end of this year, and that's being very conservative. I want real food in people's homes.
Earlier, Jake made some sort of reference, you know, what's the scope or what's the potential to scale, something to the effect of that. And the reality is that there is thousands and thousands of fantastic farmers in Australia.
Yes, sir.
That don't have time, don't have an interest, don't have an inclination, don't have an access to market. They're busy in the field. They don't want to sell direct to consumer. They don't want to talk to people in the city. They don't want to set up a butchery on the farm. They live 3,000 kilometers inland, whatever it might be. And they absolutely bemoan the fact that their beef, which they know is beautiful, gets sold into commodity markets. And if there was a market that gave them the same price, it wouldn't even have to be better. But if there was a market that gave them the same price and they knew it was going to consumers that wanted their food because they produced it, they're in. And the other thing is that a lot of these people, these same people I'm talking about, with their own reality in their life, they struggle doing one cow here, one cow there. So that the, I guess what I'm trying to paint is the more that the consumers rally behind this and push the demand up, there's farmers, there's brilliant farmers out there that turn out 5,000 absolutely gorgeous, organic, pasture-raised steers every year, and they flick them to the feedlot or they flick them to the closest abattoir because that's what the market dictates. That's the only place to take them. They're exported to Indonesia or whatever else happens. So the back-end scale, and that's not even factoring in all the people that haven't made the step towards regenerative agriculture because in their mind it doesn't work on a balance sheet. Imagine if we start proving the concept that people will pay for it. So already there's this loaded gun sitting there with more capacity than any of us can even imagine that we can handle.
Yes.
But then once we can actually build a profile of demand around it, and then the farmers can see that there's actually a demand for what they want to do on their farms, the sky's the limit. And it's a chicken and egg scenario. And what it requires is sweat equity. It requires people to put effort in, unpaid. That's how businesses are built. And it requires early adopters, people to take a risk, people to order half a body of beef and be the first testimony on the website.
Hmm. Fascinating. And actually, it really resonates strongly. Again, just to bring up the food business that Loz and I tried to get up and running. There's a whole community of people that we met that are absolutely obsessed with cooking. And you only have to look at Instagram for 5 minutes to see that that's the case. So in terms of this loaded gun concept of the back end, it's a case of then matching it with the front end. And it's there. I can tell you for sure. I know you guys will already know this, but just in my experience, it resonates. There are so many people out there that are starting to take notice of where their food comes from. Yes. And that they love cooking and they've really kind of reconnected with how they feel. And I mean, just in my sphere, like my wife was studying as a naturopath at one point. We know a ton of people that are chiropractors, osteopaths, acupuncturists here in central Melbourne that, you know, they buy organic veg and they go to Hagen's and buy their organic beef because that's the only way that you can eat once you figure out how toxic the other shit is. And yes, there are thousands of these people. So to get 5,000 signups, I think we could do that. Like I know, you know, 10 people and they'll know 10 people. And before you know it, you'll have this kind of, as Nathan mentioned, this hive mind of, you know.
Well, Izzy mentioned before, sorry to cut you off, Jake, but I think it was Izzy mentioned or Nathan mentioned before our cow, and not to detract anything from what like a couple have done because they're fantastic entrepreneurs and they've built an amazing business out of necessity. You know, COVID crushed them, fires, whatever it was, crushed them. But the reality is, it's not all, how to say it without being offensive, because I love what they've done. You know, a lot of the products that they're selling on their website doesn't have the standard of origin that I think we would be striving towards. Mm. And it's like year three in their business and it's $10 million revenue. And the shackles on the operation are probably their own energies and their own manufacturing facilities. You know, it's limitless to enter the market with some real outcome-based metrics on provenance. I think as soon as consumers understand it and it flicks in their minds, you know, that big silent majority that's in the middle of all these extremists, the carnivores and the vegans, but there's all these people in the middle that go, oh, organic farming, that sounds right. I should get a piece of that.
Just to Jacob's point, so we're all Bitcoiners on this call. I talk about Bitcoin to people every single day of my life. So you know as well as I do, you can have some really interesting conversations when you meet someone at their map of the world or where they are with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you'll get, yeah, I don't know, I'm not so sure. And you go, okay, I'll just keep that conversation alive and see where that goes. Every single time I talk to someone about what we're doing, I hear the same thing. How do I get involved? There's 25 plus million people in Australia. You do the math of how many people, like you said, Jake, how many people want real food in their home but don't know how to get it. There it is.
Yeah. Well, Izzy, what's the most powerful way someone can get involved?
Okay, so I think it's two-pronged, Jake. It's a great question. Number one, we have to build what can handle that. And that's the reason to go slow. That's the reason to nurture it from the beginning. And then to build it, all these other elements that you're talking about and what Jake said before come into play. The collateral implications, for instance, like we have Michael from VaultPay creating this decentralized platform as a payment rail. We have Nathan and yourself focusing on abattoirs. All of these things coming together, mobile abattoirs, that is, all of these things coming together simultaneously is the same thing I've seen in Bitcoin over the last 11, 12 years. It's very, very slowly, and it'll be suddenly. Because to your point, people want real food. Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of, to me, it's not a matter of reaching them. The summits will reach them. As we do public launch, that will reach them. With Slim coming over and Slim's expanse in his networks, that will help reach people. But what will really reach them is the proof of work. The ones who are the early adopters and doing it, like you said, buying direct from a rancher, a farmer, going out, meeting you, meeting your family, seeing how you raise cattle, knowing that that's what I want for my family. I want what Jacob Wolke has. I want what Dom Walker has. And when people understand that they can do that, and more of these farmers understand that they can sell direct to them, to your point, that cohesion creates the market appeal, I think, in my opinion. I'd be curious for your...
Well, people ask me all the time, like yourself, meeting people daily and talking to them about our farm mission, and they're going, how can we help? I literally meet people that want to volunteer a day a month on my farm laboring, or can I help you with your social media, or can I, you know, whatever it might be, all these weird and wonderful gifts. And the gift that I would ask for is I don't need anyone to go above and beyond, just buy the meat. I'm not trying to blackmail you. I'm not trying to take you on a ride, but if you genuinely believe in what we're doing, don't turn up and give me your labor. Like, I don't need your day a month, as generous as that might be. Just work out where your family's at and put the order in. And once a month, I'll drop off a $100 box on your doorstep, because, you know, that's what makes the world go round. It's that barter. It's that trade. It's that, you know, give me some of your energy, I'll give you some of mine. It doesn't need to be this fanciful, peripheral hippie sort of commune trade. Just literally, if you like what I'm doing, invest in it, give me some cash, and I'll give you the fruits of my labor, and let's just get on with business.
I want to give you Bitcoin, not cash.
I'll take whatever. Sats, gold, cash. I will take labor. I'm not against any barter.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because on the website there'll be a From the Paddock section where if someone does need a little bit of labor, like say there is a farmer somewhere that goes, man, I could really use some labor this month, he'll be able to put that up there. Or someone going, hey, I'm going to be in New South Wales, I just really want to spend a couple of days on the farm, get my hands dirty. He can put his hand up and say that.
Well, there's all these little jobs that I need done every year.
Yeah.
And they always bite me in the ass, like getting my tractor service because it's not registered. I need to get someone on site. The guy that services my tractor is on his last legs. He's like 85 and he's a gorgeous old man. He does a great job, but I'm not too sure how long he's going to turn up for and pull wheels off my tractor and replace bearings. So, you know, we need labor. We need skilled labor.
So imagine a diesel mechanic is coming through Albury and he just goes, yeah, no, I'll fix your tractor. Send a box over to me, missus.
Done.
Yeah.
That is a network effect, right? So it's the website. Is this digital product that, you know, facilitates connecting urban and rural communities, but then equally there'll be other layers to it. I imagine that over time you can add as features that will be incredibly powerful. And community is powerful on its own. You know, this whole concept of Bitcoiners as the social layer above Bitcoin driving as much value as the actual technology itself really resonates, as you know, to me every day. When you, like all of us on this call now, have gone down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, buy it, hold it. And it's slowly changing our view of the world and making us healthier, healthy choices, as you already described. So it's very cool to think where something like the ABI could go. And so that brings me to a question I'm intrigued about, which is, do you think food is potentially a gateway drug to Bitcoin? And, you know, in the same way that everyone wants to get involved straight away, when they talk about the ABI and you tell them about what's going on, people don't necessarily want to hear about Bitcoin. So is that connected in some way? And,
yeah, I think it can be, Jake. And I think there's some parallels between the farming life tradesmen, sports people. They're trading their labor, they're trading physical labor, which I think is more demanding than sitting behind a desk doing spreadsheets or whatever you might be doing.
Yeah.
And it has perhaps less of a lifespan than labor that's done from a white-collar job. So you're always more susceptible to injuries, to accidents. There is that real proof of work in what you're doing there. So to explain to someone that you're putting in all this work, and farmers very well know the blood, sweat, and tears that they put in, the risks they take to produce what they do. And you say, well, what do you trade that for? You trade that for money. Well, what's money? Well, the monetary system we have at the moment, you do all this work, and there's a fellow sitting down in the city, he's got a money printer. He can put zeros on a screen that can totally sort of wipe out the value that you've done. Like he can put zeros on a screen and create multiples of that sort of value with no work whatsoever. So when you start thinking about that sort of system, you might start to trigger a thought that, well, perhaps there could be a better system. Perhaps in the past with gold, you know, centuries and millennia ago, we had a better system than we do now. But fortunately, Bitcoin's come along now and we've got money for the digital age, money that is absolutely scarce, so that you know whatever proportion that you have of the 21 million Bitcoins that will ever exist, they're yours. No one can print them out from under you. And that is the best way that we know of storing our scarce labor for savings, for, you know, an insurance fund, for things that we might need down the track. So I think that message is really important to get across to farmers. We're conscious that the Australian Beef Initiative is not about Bitcoin. It's mostly about, like we've talked about, securing food sovereignty. But there's definitely the opportunity to introduce the concept of Bitcoin and just see what comes back. You know, there will be some farmers who may be interested, a bit curious. And really, for the people who join the network, one incredible benefit that they have is that they've got access to some very experienced quality Bitcoiners who can get them going on the Bitcoin path if they wish to.
Interesting. It's that whole process of kind of sparking debate, isn't it, that we touched on earlier. Go on, Iz.
You know, Jake, to that point, John will never throw his hand up. He's one of the most humble human beings I've ever met in my entire life. He'll never say this about himself, but this is a fact. He is out there orange-pilling farmers left and right. Am I right or am I right?
Come on, Johnny boy, jump in and tell us. So what have been some of the challenges involved in orange-pilling farmers?
First thing I'll say is the ABI is not a hard sell to noobs in this space. They all know when they walk into Woolies and Coles, just something doesn't feel right. So when they hear the concept of ABI, it's not a hard sell and they're really keen to go to the source to get the food. So a few Bitcoin is another step. That's a bit of a hurdle for noobs to sort of get first time, but I have to say ABI and buying your food from stores is not a hard sell. And I've had only positive experiences with my friends in Melbourne thus far. And so that's first thing. Orange pilling farmers, I mean, it's just farmers because they're the ones that we're dealing with right now. But as we know, Bitcoin is for everybody. There is nobody that is immune from the ills of central banking. So it just happens that I'm talking to farmers on a daily basis in the API chat. But I point out the same things that I point out everybody. Your daily costs are going up. You pay 1.6% every time you tap your card. Every time a customer tries to pay, there's some person in the middle that is swiping 1.6% of your energy. And, you know, I go to farmers markets every Saturday up to Coburg North here where I live. And again, farmers are really receptive to it. It's really refreshing to see them, hanging on every word you say. Yeah, I'm out there. And it's really fun. And I love talking. And it kind of sharpens you for your arguments in terms of, like, if you have 10 conversations a day with 10 farmers who ask you 20 different questions, well, you have to be on your toes and you need to know your stuff. And it just helps me become, I guess, better at doing what I do. I'm not shilling. I'm just laying out the facts. And I'm trying to just explain that this thing exists. This thing's great. And this thing isn't going away. And you might want to get some in case it catches.
But what I like about that, though, John, is I think so helpful for any conversation is context. So, like, you know, you try and teach someone something that they don't need to know in a scenario when you give them, like, some bullshit scenario, and it's like, here's a role play, and you, like, you know, it just doesn't work. Whereas you have a very specific scenario where it's like, okay, this might make sense for you right now, perhaps learn some more. But I'm conscious of ABI obviously not necessarily being a Bitcoin tool, but more of a food sovereignty vehicle. Speaking of which, I think we're going to try and kind of wrap things up in the next 10 minutes or so. So I've got one question that you can all answer. And actually, it's Jake's question. So what's more useful in an end of world scenario, Bitcoin or beef?
What's most useful is guns. The biggest guns you can find. Because whoever's got those is going to take your beef and your Bitcoin in that hypothetical end of the world scenario.
Nathan Smith, which... he's off to the gun shop. All right. Who's up next?
I'll weigh in on this 100% because for me, oh, my computer's just gone down. For me, it's very simple. Bitcoin is bigger than all of us. So if I'm in an end of the world situation, I'm going to lay my life down for Bitcoin, hands down, before my own life, before whatever. And my lovely scientific philosophical wife would gladly do the same, to protect what the Bitcoin protocol is. Having said that, as I said on Twitter, if cows were the only thing left in this hypothetical, good question, by the way, Wolkie, way to trigger a lot of people on Twitter. if they were the only things left on the earth, and that was sort of, I'd go full Maasai diet, 100%.
Okay.
I love beef, but it's Bitcoin for me every time. I just could never practice it.
Well, there's one little caveat, and you can't eat Bitcoin.
No.
So I love Bitcoin, love hard money, but I love hard beef better.
Hey, Jake, before you wrap it up, Mr. Woodhouse, because the name of your show is called Bitcoin with Jake, should we touch on that at all? Like anyone's story? I know Jacob Walkie has a bit of a fascinating coin story. I don't want to derail you.
No. We can ask anything. There's no rush. Yeah, well, Izzy, fire away. So what did you want to ask Jake?
Well, number one, I'll say Jacob is an amazing guy because I've been able to get to know him through the ABI. I've seen how he is as a family man. He takes his wife on a date night every Wednesday. Sometimes it's on a Thursday. And even on his date night, if we have an ABI call, he's right there, hands right there. And we'll have a date night ABI call, which I think is pretty awesome. But what I've seen with him is in someone in the beginning, not necessarily really looking at Bitcoin, and admittedly so, he said, I'm not even going to say it, it'll make me puke. He had played with other things. I think they call them shit coins, but he's been able to utilize the Bitcoin protocol and receive Bitcoin. So I'm curious, as someone who's been in Bitcoin a long time, what's that experience been like for you? I know you said you would accept anything, just buy my meat, but what has that experience been like for you in terms of getting to know what Bitcoin is?
Oof, it's a big question, isn't it? I said this on the recent podcast that I had with Slim, you know, one of the, and I guess I still feel like a bit of an outsider on the Bitcoin world, and I feel like everything I say is still a little bit heretic level, like saying I like cows more than sats is still a little bit heretic, but I'm a cow man, you know, we're all coming from a different place, but I understand and I love a lot about Bitcoin, the fact that you're liable to yourself, you're sovereign. You've got a good store of value. Like, I get all this. But for me, in my context of being a farmer, a salesman, a family man, I love the people that I've met through Bitcoin. You know, everyone that I've crossed paths with through a hashtag or at an event or through a transaction, we have enough in common that there's no animosity. We're not standing each other out, trying to figure out where each other's at. Like, there's enough in common, the fact that you're a Bitcoiner, that you're starting from a close enough place that everything's all good. And that to me is, you know, more than sovereignty and hard money, where we've got community and they all need to be a part of it together. So I'll let you guys be the hard money and the sovereignty guys, and I'll be the beef and the community guy, and we'll all bring our little spin together and get along with the story.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing, Jake. It takes multiple touch points, I think, to get Bitcoin. Like, everyone's been on their own journey. What I've enjoyed the most about doing my podcast, this is roughly going to be episode 60. You ask the same five questions and you get completely different answers from everyone. And that's what's so fascinating about it is, you know, what brought you in. Jake, in your case, you're ultimately going to say that you were getting involved in the ABI, and the ABI was run by some people that were talking about it a lot, and boom, before you know it, that's what you started accepting as the most useful form of money for beef. And that's an incredibly profound moment that, you know, will be happening all over the world right now. That's what's so crazy to get your head around, is conversations like this are happening in a decentralized manner. And actually, that's going to bring me on nicely to the question that I had to try and close up with. It's really around threats. So, you know, the abattoir business that exists is not going to be super excited about a startup kind of decentralized network. Equally, the big middleman boys that make a big margin in between the feedlots and the consumers in the high street, they're not going to be so happy about this kind of thing popping up and facilitating trade on a local basis, peer-to-peer. So what are the biggest threats to something like the ABI? And is someone going to come knocking at some point and say, yeah, you guys are shut down, sorry?
Well, I think if we got anywhere near that sort of a threat, Jake, we will have succeeded beyond our wildest dreams.
Okay. And by that, you mean just like as soon as the big boys give a shit, then they won't be able to stop you anyway.
Yes, sir. Well, that's certainly what we're intending to build, yeah. And as I said, we take a leaf out of Bitcoin's book there, where you can perhaps go and attack individual Bitcoiners or prominent Bitcoiners. But, you know, for everyone you cut down, 10 will stand up in their place. So it becomes ultimately futile. And, yeah, I don't really just see that as a problem. Food is something that everyone needs. There's tremendous interest from people in the source of their food. There's tremendous interest in environmental regeneration, which is a key part of what we're encouraging and facilitating here. So, no, I don't see any great threats to the ABI as a broad concept. There may be some commercial activities that we get involved with. We have a number of ideas for those sorts of things which could be done under the umbrella of the ABI, and that'll be subject to the usual sort of, you know, commercial pressures, as they should be. But we're very conscious of ensuring that there are no individuals, there's no sort of central point of failure that could make a vulnerability out of this initiative.
So interesting, isn't it? Like a design philosophy that Bitcoin is helping expose to people, and then it kind of infiltrates into other areas. And you just wonder where else in 10 years' time that would have been borrowed and used and done so in a valuable way. Okay, well, what I want to do is just quickly pop around to each one of you. Any final comments on what we've spoken about today and how you feel about how things are going or what you want to say as we close up? Sure. Yeah, go for it, Jakey. Go on.
I'm positive. I'm motivated. I'm excited. And I'm going to segue completely, do a 270-degree turn. And just as a little bit of show and tell for everybody, I've got this book here. And I like to bring this out when we've got dinner parties. This book is called The Australasian Home and Farm Manual, printed in 1885. So this is before vaccines, before antibiotics, before feedlots, before traffic lights, you know, before commercial airlines.
Before electricity.
And so everything in this book is outdated and worthless. But if you were going to start a life off the grid, if there was the apocalypse and you had your stats on your wallet and you were running around the back of the bush, this would be worth more than any 50 combined PhD theses that you could scrap together for your life's worth. And I just think that's a really interesting mental exercise. Coming from 1880 with all of this outdated knowledge is actually a manual for life. And all of our new knowledge that we're giving people these honours for and these big pay packets for, compared to this, are ultimately useless. And so that's one of the paradigms that when we do our farm tours and when we get people on land and talk to them, it's, you know, prior to the introduction of antibiotics and animal agriculture, which was in the 1940s, we still had animal agriculture for thousands of years. So the point is that there's other tools and we've forgotten them. And if we support the farmers that are trying to rekindle some of these skill sets and knowledge bases, that there's probably there's a lot of worth and value sitting under these covers that's worth digging up.
That's absolutely epic. I love the concept of the ABI becoming this kind of decentralized, unkillable tool for the curation of wisdom.
Yes.
And it's like so much wisdom has been lost in modern day culture that often we don't realize how crazy a full-on fiat standard actually has been. like the amount of garbage that we consider to be true. It's just crazy. Wow, what's that, Jake?
It's just every page you turn to, there's blueprints, diagrams, feed rations. You know, our paradigm is your cow gets mastitis and you give it antibiotics. This book talks about how the cow's going to act days before it gets antibiotics and how to notice it and then how to treat it before it ever even manifests. They're just completely different places to start thinking from. So you bring that back to modern day, what we're trying to achieve. Do you want to be sitting next to your child, your overweight type 2 diabetic child in hospital while they're on a Ventolin or whatever it might be? Or do you want to get them off the Twinkies and the Fruit Loops and the Mars bars and get them onto some beef and just avoid the whole thing altogether? It's the same thing.
You know, I'd add one. That was perfectly awesome, both of you. And I would invite you to come and rework this mission statement with us as well, because some things were said just then by both of you men that were absolutely solid. My grandpa and my grandma and their parents, Mammy and Pappy, they didn't know what biodynamic meant, biodynamic farming or organic or permaculture or regenerative agriculture. You know what they knew? The land. That's what they knew. The soil. You had to know the seasons and the soil. My grandmother had enough food in our house, canned, that she made from scratch to last a year if anything happened. Everything we ever ate came off of our farm. All of us were super healthy, super vibrant. This knowledge, once lost, you don't get it back. Like if Jacob's house, something happened, a tornado came through, and God bless it, it does not. But if it did, that book is gone. With the ABI, or with any other initiative that has these similar goals, you preserve that. You preserve it for the people who are going to come after us. And what are we doing here? If we're not doing something better for future, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I'm into that. It's lots of powerful causes to get behind at the moment that we've discussed in this call that are incredibly inspirational. And sorry, Nathan and John, either of you want to just jump up and final comment, please?
Just to say thanks to yourself, Jake, for bringing us all together. Someone spoke about community tonight. I just love chatting to the lads, and it's been really fun chatting to you all, and motivated to go forward.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. Really great discussion. Appreciate you facilitating it. I'd round off by saying I feel like there are three key things that we need to fix in our generation to be able to pass on a better situation to our children and those that follow. Is the money, the food, and the energy. So obviously the Australian Beef Initiative is focused on fixing the food. It does feel like there are some powerful or loud voices out there that are opposed to farming, opposed to agriculture, beef, the things that we value. And it can feel like those forces are pretty big at times, but really each of us has a vote in where we spend our consumer dollars. So that's the power that we all have. We have the power of connecting through a network and encouraging others to do the same and having these discussions. So, you know, one by one, it becomes very big and very powerful as an entity of its own. So we're looking forward to that in the future. And perhaps we'll get to chat with you in 12 months' time and see where we've gotten.
Progress, for sure. Yeah. Well, boys, thank you so much for joining. What is the best way to get in touch with the ABI if someone wants to reach out and have a chat?
It's actually a good question, Mr. Woodhouse. We have a lovely, lovely guy right now by the name of Crispy. I won't dox him and give his real name.
Yeah.
Crispy owns, he may have done it on his store. He owns the bitcoinonly.store. And he's one of the volunteers, just said, hey, you want a website? I'll help you build that website right now. So okay. The website will be done before we all go to Jacob Wilkie's. We all descend on Jacob Wilkie's farm. For this,
we haven't plugged the event yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to get to that. But is there a email address or anything like that yet? Not yet.
Nathan?
There's nothing as yet. We'll have the website live within a week or two. Jake, it may well be live by the time this episode goes to air. Yep. And then we'll have the usual socials. So that'll be coming out as well pretty soon.
Can keep an eye out for that. Well, also, obviously, anyone reach out to me if you want to reach any of these guys at the ABI.
It's so sweet, man.
Jake, you're right. The events, So, John, I think you're involved in one up in Buxton, right? And Jake, you're doing another one. So there's a couple of ABI events coming up.
There's more than a couple.
Okay, correct me where I'm wrong. Talk us through it. So what's coming up?
Well, Jacob, let's start with yours because you're the inaugural. You put your hand up first and went, lads, I've got this. Let me show you what a summit's all about. So tell us about yours.
May as well start with the best. On the Sunday, the 12th of February, we are hosting the Australian Beef Initiative at Walkie Farm, which is Albury.
Yeah.
We're on the border. So we're 3 hours north of Melbourne, 6 hours south of Sydney. And there's hotels and motels here. So, you know, there's no excuse. The roads are open. You can drive down. You can book a $70 room. Come out. My wife will make you coffee and give you cold sausage and kick you up the butt. You can come on a farm tour 7 a.m. in the morning. The night before, Saturday 11th, we're having a catered dinner at a local restaurant for those that are staying the night before, but that's sold out well and truly long ago. The Sunday's a huge day. 7 a.m. farm tour kicks it off, and I don't think we'll be wrapped up until about 5 in the evening. We've got guest speakers. We've got these three gentlemen that I'm sitting with doing a presentation on the ABI. Then we've got a couple doctors. We've got Dr. Max Golhane talking about metabolic health and regenerative agriculture and how what you eat affect how you feel. We've got Dr. Pran Yoganathan. He's got a presentation called What's the Beef with Beef? You know, we're being sold this insect agenda. And a lot of doctors toe the line, but there's a lot who don't. So we found the good ones and we're bringing them to Walkie Farm for you. And then we've got a few more presentations. We've got Texas Slim all the way from the USA, ladies and gentlemen, coming to Orange Pill, everyone in Albury Wodonga. Then in the evening, we've got John Tiernan just giving us that next little step towards. I'm hoping by the end of John's presentation, everyone's got their smartphones out, downloading a wallet, you know, scanning a QR code up on the projector, feeling like they're getting wealthy. And who have I missed? Was there anyone else? And then obviously Izzy. Izzy's got a presentation about the here now. What's your presentation called again, Izzy?
Sovereignty in the here now.
Sovereignty in the here now. And we're gonna get a lot of people thinking. I sold half the tickets and we've got 2 weeks left to go, which I think is a tremendous trajectory. And we're going to have people come for the farming and hear the Bitcoin. We're going to have people come for the Bitcoin and hear the farming. I know for a fact we have people coming to hear Dr. Pran Yoganathan only, and they're going to hear about the farming and the Bitcoin. So it's a really fun day, and this is a community day. We're going to make lifelong friends. We're going to break bread. We're going to walk around a farm, and I'm personally honored and excited to use my farm as a place to build community because farms are biosecurity risks. They're dangerous places where you wouldn't let your children run around. They stink. The animals are dangerous. Like everything about a farm today is rotten. And you don't have to go back very long at all. And the farms where the church went after Mass and they went and hung out together and went swimming in one of the dams or the kids were climbing the trees. Like I remember doing that as a whippersnapper. So I'm excited that the farm has become a community point again in our area, a gathering point for people to meet. And that is February 12th, Sunday. You can buy tickets on Eventbrite and it's $115 for a ticket and that is exceptional value.
Yeah, especially with Anne doing the cooking. Absolutely, mate.
It's all farm food. It's all organic food. She's going to knock your socks off. My wife.
Sounds fantastic, Jake.
Tops.
Hey, John Tiernan, Mr. Humble. That should be your Twitter handle, actually. Do you want to lay out what Dom Walker's doing, what Dan Kelton's doing, and some things like that so they know where the other farms are?
Yeah, so we've lined up two other farmers, Dan Kelton, who's located in Buxton. He's going to give a farm tour on the 19th of February. And much like Jacob, he's going to run through his philosophy and teach his customers about where their food comes from. So that's a great day lined up on the 19th of February. It's about an hour and a half drive from Melbourne if you're coming up from that side. And then a bit further up, not too far from Jacob, is Dom Walker in Mount Buffalo. He has a beautiful herd of cattle and he'll be showing his customers around on the 12th of March. So we'll be looking to get as many boots on the ground for that one and just to go and shake Dom's hand, shake Dan's hand, shake Jacob's hand and build this out. Yeah, so it's trying to promote the farmer to meet the customer, trying to show the customers who these guys are, why you should support them. Yeah, it's a symbiotic relationship.
Brilliant. Well, gents, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure learning about this, and I wish you all the very, very best with this project. It's fantastic. So thank you.
Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. As I said at the start, if you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best, Jake.